Still connecting to the cloud, so you're good. Yeah. All right. It's being recorded. Excellent. Mark, do you want to kick it off? Unless we have any questions from the floor.
Sure. Hey, good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking time to make another webinar. I know that so many situations are changing quickly on our campuses and around the state. I think this is another good opportunity for us as a community to come together and maybe just touch base with each other. We'll give you some updates of what's happening with OLIS and the shared services, but then also turn the mic over to all of you to ask us questions or maybe ask each other questions. There's been a flurry of activity on the listservs, and we've been doing our best to kind of keep track of it. Also, as of just before this meeting began, we received word that Elsevier has accepted our counteroffer. And so this Friday, the community will get a presentation on what the final contract details involve. And so we look forward to being able to share that with you on Friday. We're going to let Curtis kind of drive that. He's really been leading us through these efforts, so I think it's important that he carries that message to all of you. And other than that, I'm just happy to see how many people have joined us today, and I hope everybody is well. I hope everybody is safe. I know this is a very stressful time. So we're going to do whatever we can to reduce that anxiety as best as we can. So I mean, I think the first thing that I'd like to maybe touch base on, I'm going to turn it back over to Shannon, is maybe just giving an update, a general update of what's happening with Alma Primo and with the shared services themselves, because I know a lot of people have been reaching out to your staff and asking for support lately.
Yeah, so one of the things that we've been working on is just gathering information about how many libraries are still lending, and it looks like it's at the point where we probably will need to close that down for everybody, just lending materials between SUNYs.
Yeah.
So we will finalize that relatively soon, but I think, it's at the point where there's not enough libraries who are still open and shipping things. So we're going to coordinate that over the course of the day, but we just wanted to make sure everybody is on the same page with that. So we've also been working with campuses to coordinate any shutdown activities in Alma and Primo, or updating anything as far as waiving fines, et cetera. But don't hesitate to reach out if you need help with that. We'll do it as fast as we possibly can, or give you the information that you need to communicate with your users as fast as we possibly can as well. And I know Jennifer is working on just gathering information on who's closed or who's partially closed that we will start sharing out today as well, so that you can, have the information about how many SUNY libraries are closing or have reduced hours or whatever it might be, as far as how your local campus is reacting as well. On a positive note, not that, everything needs to be, kind of related to closing down, we're getting the rest of the LibKey stuff set up so that, hopefully your users will have a better experience from off campus. That should be coming out in the next couple of days as well, so we can switch you to having that live very, very soon. We're having another webinar on Thursday just to walk through. I think we're going to focus a lot on the Primo end of things, of how to turn off a lot of different services in Primo and enable or disable display logic, so that, if you're still doing article requesting, you can have that on, but not anything else, so that you don't have to deal with confusion on that end of it. So that's going to be Thursday. And Michelle, if you have the link to that, if you could post it in the chat, or Tim, I don't know. We've promoted it out a few times, but we'll put it in the chat as well. And we will, of course, record it. So I think that's the gist of what we're doing as far as a support standpoint. But you know, if anybody has any questions or if I've missed anything, let me know. Any questions from anybody? We have, yeah. Thanks, Tim and Michelle.
So, one thing we did discuss this morning, before the 11 a.m. Was how many libraries are actually offering chat services? How many libraries are actually offering some sort of virtual support for students and faculty during this time? So, Shannon, how do we maybe plan on collecting that information from campuses?
I think we're just gonna, what we're finding is about 25 campuses will respond to any survey we put out. So I think we want to be better than 50%. So we're going to go to your websites, for that other 50%. So we'll ask you to respond. And, I suspect most who respond will be those who do the chat, and then we're going to have to go triangulate the data a little bit more.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just want to let people know too, that we're being asked these questions by senior leadership in terms of what libraries are doing to support students and faculty during this time. So it's not just OLIS who's asking for this information. It is senior leadership as they try and get a better picture of how campuses are responding.
Yeah, and we're doing that same going and looking at your website, or we will query you directly on things like closures or other pieces of data that will be helpful to have a sense of the sense of things across SUNY, and we'll be as quick and updated as much as possible too. So,
Shannon, this is Lauren from Potsdam. I think this is fabulous that you're collecting this information. As you know, a lot of the talk has been which libraries are open, which libraries are closed, who's essential, who's non-essential. And for the provosts that are keeping all these libraries open, there is a huge risk to the faculty, the staff, the librarians, the students. And this is not helping to flatten the curve, because all these libraries are now large gathering places. So I would like to see the SLC, maybe we can compile a lot of this information to help support the libraries that are still having to be open and maybe struggling with how to limit access and keep people apart from each other.
Are you seeing that today? I mean, are you seeing, you're saying it's large gatherings, but if your student population is cut down by more than 50% on the campus, what's the impact within the space of the library when other facilities remain open as well?
Oh, we're closed down. We're closed.
Okay.
We're doing a chat. We're doing a virtual reference. We are closed. But before we closed, we were concerned that community patrons were coming to us because the public libraries had closed, because the schools had closed. So I think I think there are some libraries, people out there that are open and they're worried.
Hi, this is Diane at SUNY Brockport, and I'm one of those libraries that is still, hi Jennifer, I am one of those libraries that is still open, and this is of grave concern to my librarians and also to my staff members, because I have staff members who have elderly parents and who are watching their children because the schools are all closed. And I have asked the provost for us to close the building and was told no, because the campus is not closed, because SUNY has not closed the campuses, that we are to remain open and provide services. I've closed off the lower level and upper level of the library so that people can only use the first floor, the main floor of the library. However, since there are no other places on campus for them to gather, the potential exists for them to congregate in the library. And I've asked our emergency operations center to come up with, how do I prevent this? And what do I do if we ask students to leave because they shouldn't be here? We've restricted access to the library by requiring people to show a valid student ID, student, faculty, or staff ID. But there's no guarantee that I'm still not going to get alumni in here. But the purpose is to keep the, to prevent community members from coming in. So there's a number of issues. I've reached out to various people on campus to get those. But the preference is really, we would like to be closed or we have lots of restricted access to the services that we offer. You know, most of the work we can do is online, but it's not, you know, it, but I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place trying to please the provost while, and meet the needs that she wants, but at the same time, addressing the needs and concerns of my employees.
Carrie, are you going to say something?
Just a point of clarification. Presidents, provosts, senior administrators at the SUNY System Office do not have the authority to close a campus.
Correct.
The only person in the state who has that authority is Andrew Cuomo. I just want to be clear that, you know, that it's not necessarily the system decision. It's not necessarily campus president's decision. It is currently a governor's decision.
I understand that. So, but in this case, it's a case of, you know, we remain open. We're still open. We're still providing services. We've cut back our hours, but I still don't, the potential still exists for people to use this as a gathering spot.
So here at Potsdam, I was asked by the provost to give her a list of essential and non-essential people. And I said, everybody in the library, staff and library faculty as well, are considered non-essential. I will be the only one who is essential. And she said, fine. And we are part of Learning Commons, but the library is the biggest entity in the building. And we managed to close the building and close it down because I was able to get us on that non-essential list. So this listing for the state of who's essential and who's non-essential is it's problematic because every campus is viewing that in a different way. There's no consistent policy.
Right, so it sounds like the, you know, Carrie, from your input, it sounds like the governor would be the only one who could really influence that policy, right?
As I said, the governor is the only one that can shut down a campus. Every campus received the same guidance in terms of determining, you know, the traditional definition of, you know, essential and non-essential has kind of shifted. So now that it's essential to respond to the COVID pandemic. And depending upon how campuses are viewing students coming onto their facilities or staying in their facilities or coming back to their facilities to offer some of those students who really don't have a safer place to go, a location, we're going to have this kind of differential in terms of how campuses are responding. That's the nature of the State University of New York, unfortunately, and or fortunately, depending upon who you ask. People have to kind of play it out on the campus. I think the situation will continue to evolve. There's no doubt about that. And I think we all just have to remember that, you know, safety is first. Also providing that safe haven for our students and providing services to our students as best as we can. as possible. I agree that, you know, we probably need to be clear with our communities about access. And that's part of the reason why we're trying to gather information for our senior leadership so that we can start to make those kind of cases. Look at, if we are here for students, that's it. I mean, that's what our primary purpose. We can't support the community. And if public libraries close down, which they are doing, people may start to look to shift to our spaces. And I think we, you know, it's more than reasonable for us to start to say, you know, we have to restrict access in some form. And many campuses are changing their hours of operation, and everybody's responding a little bit differently. And everybody's situation is a little bit different at this point in time, too. I think we're all going to be in the same boat within a few days, but right now people are responding, and, you know, based on their local situations. And I'm confused, and I'm usually pretty good about this stuff of, you know, what role do the counties play in this for the community colleges? Your labor unions are different in the community colleges as well. So I'm not, you know, that's a whole different situation to play through.
So just a couple additional comments on that. You know, I think we also have to understand that so many of these decisions are being made in real time. Every day I wake up, I feel like there's a new decision or a new direction. I mean, I think what we keep hearing is how everything is so fluid right now. I think that's probably the case at a lot of your campuses. And so, you know, I just want to kind of go back to Lauren's comment about the SLC making a statement. You know, I would maybe caution you about that, only because there are many deans and directors that may not want the SLC to make a statement so broadly, because they're kind of managing this at their local level, and they may want to maintain that relationship with their senior leadership. I would just encourage everybody to maybe keep that channel communication open with their provost and the president. And if they don't feel that channel is open, maybe look to the SLC for a little guidance about how they've cleared the path for communication with their senior leadership. I know Christine Faraday just put something in the chat. It's a blog post that Chris Borg put out from MIT.
Mark, did you want to show some of the kind of the main websites that SUNY's putting out about resources related to the COVID-19 response?
Yeah. I have most of these bookmarked. Give me one second. Okay, here's the first one that was generated. I'll put it in the chat as well as provide a quick sharing of my screen so you guys can all see what it looks like. You folks can all see what it looks like. Let's see. So this is the initial page that SUNY put together. Essentially, it's for the general community. It kind of gives updates on what communications have come through the governor's office, of course, additional SUNY communications and some resources that are available. You can search through this. This is our way of trying to get a clearinghouse together, or just some communications that have come out, kind of like a one-stop shop, if you will. There is a lot of information in here. It may seem overwhelming, but I think it's good to maybe review it just to get a handle on some of the communications that have taken place, but also some of the services that are available to our students and even to us. I mean, not to try to make, lemonade out of the situation, but I mean, we do have some flexibility right now with procurement. You know, and that's one of the reasons why we're trying to get a handle on what's happening in terms of virtual reference and virtual communication with the campus community. Because, you know, if if campuses have been entertaining the idea of, let's say, expanding their shared their spring share package to also include a chat client, you know, that's something maybe to present to the SLC board and say, hey, do you think the SLC can maybe start to talk to spring share about you know, doing a global agreement in terms of chat with SpringShare. I know Zoom has offered up a free access to their video conferencing tool. Typically, it's only 40 minutes for the free version, but they've extended that to 1 hour. I mean, there could be an opportunity to maybe talk to the board about you know, maybe having a global Zoom license or extending some seats to some SUNY libraries that might want to start doing virtual chat, you know, through video. These are just some opportunities that we may have available to us to potentially pursue as a community. Again, not just trying to make lemonade out of the situation, but I just want to make sure everybody has that general awareness. There's other sites that are available as well. Let me dig those up too. If anybody has them at their fingertips, feel free to present them, because I have, these are always changing and I do kind of lose track of all these sites. Here's one that was created for students. By the way, SUNY Online. Oh. Somebody's sharing something.
This is the student site.
Yeah, Carrie's sharing.
Thanks, Carrie.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to unmute. You can see all these campuses are listed here with links to online courses, campus help desk, and knowledge bases. And Mark has already reached out to the folks that are managing this site to add libraries. There's a link in these as well.
And as a one-stop shop for us library folks, the link that I shared, the homepage is all of these links that was just shared. So the LiveGuide homepage has all of that.
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, and kudos to Jennifer too, because she has been working with all of the people in the community to try to get as much information about the libraries that are currently happening. And again, it's forever changing, but Jennifer and Shannon have really been tracking on this. So kudos to the both of them. I'll share the LibGuide page as well right here. Yes, and as Jennifer said, they have links to all the SUNY specific pages that have been created. I'll also let you know that the OER services did some training over the weekend for faculty who needed to move quickly to a digital environment. So we wanted to make sure that they were aware that there were digital courseware that were available through the OER services. And then also we were making people aware of different publishers that started to offer up some of their content freely. In a digital capacity. I think Cengage was the first one out there, or maybe McGraw Hill or Wiley. I'm kind of losing track of it. But all the publishers now are starting to release a lot of the content for free. And it really helped faculty to understand that there were some stop gaps to put in place if they had to quickly move to an online environment. What was fascinating about this, folks, and I think this is just for general awareness, many of the faculty on the webinars were unaware of some of the support that was in place on their campus previous to the pandemic. And so that proved to me that there has to be a further investment both locally and globally to improve communication with our faculty constituents. And I'll stop sharing now.
Yeah, I think Bonnie put something great in chat, that Vital Source was one of the big ones that came out yesterday with free access through May 25th. 2020. And at least for them, a lot of their textbooks were available through VitalSource. So so I think that could be something. Would that be something that would be helpful for us to kind of demo how you would find all that information out? Or is that, we could do that in our Thursday webinar. Go ahead.
Hey, Shannon, this is Mike. The California State Community College System put together a really great list. I'll share that with you. We can share it with a larger community of all the vendors that have kind of opened up access. And I just checked this morning. They even had Cambridge, Cambridge University Press eBooks, which is a late edition last night. So pretty on time list. I'll get that doc to you.
If you can send stuff into Basecamp, I will add it to the vendor and other resources tab of our live guide. Yeah. And I just sent a join link to the Basecamp because that's a place where we can discuss it. That's not overwhelming emails, at least if you turn off your Basecamp notifications.
You know, it's good. Jennifer. It's good that we can start adding that. So yeah.
Mike, was there anything else you wanted to add about the webinars that you guys did over the weekend?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Real quickly, there was close to 600 SUNY faculty that registered for these, and just to kind of unpack some information around these webinars, SUNY OER Services, as many of you probably know, does have two partners that they work with, Lumen Learning and Carnegie Mellon's Online Learning Initiative. Those partners responded really quickly, literally within less than 90 minutes when we identified a need that, thousands of SUNY faculty are going to be moving online. And so we stood up webinars really to make them aware of some of the choices that were available to them. And then, as is our practice with everything OER, let faculty choose what's best for them, be that OER or traditionally copyrighted material. But the fact that there was, out of the 600 registered, close to 500 that participated in the webinars really identified a need. As Mark said, in many cases, there's not OER content for a lot of the courses taught in SUNY, especially the upper levels. So we did direct them back to publisher content. And also in some specific cases, especially with streaming media, back to their own library websites. So if you hear or get emails or inquiries from faculty saying, hey, I attended an OER webinar. They said my faculty had Swank Media or other digital streaming media products. That's where that interest is coming from. But again, we really tried to balance our approach and say there's OER. There's traditionally copyrighted publishing material, and there's also great resources existing in our SUNY libraries that many faculty were appreciative to hear of.
Hey, Carrie, Mike, thanks for that. And Carrie, I was just looking at the chat. You had put something out there about campuses being asked to track expenditures. Could you just elaborate on that just a little bit for us?
As best I can. I just got an email.
Sorry to put you on the spot, boss.
Yeah, DOB is asking the system to have campuses track all expenses related to COVID. We do have emergency authority to be procurement if we need to. I don't know if there's anything taking place in the library where you are looking at additional procurements or additional services or things like that to ease situation. If you are, just encourage you to track it and let your senior administration know. My sense is your campuses are going to kind of struggle to understand how to track all of that because it's going to come in so many different ways, shapes, and forms.
Thank you, Carrie.
Mike, I wanted to ask because a few people have asked me this. Did you track who registered for those courses, and would it be possible to send some of that information or those webinars to librarians at those institutions who might be able to help those faculty?
Yeah, I can definitely disaggregate that information and send it out to our OER leads, who the ready list I have, Shannon. And encourage OER leads, if they're not librarians, to reach out to the librarians with that information. And I should say all the webinars were recorded as well, and in the large CPD SUNY site that Mark shared, all the recordings to the webinars are on there. But I'll get the individual campus list and faculty that attended out to each campus.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and Mike, that just so you know, there people are looking for the recordings. And then Corey from Canton had a great question, and I think maybe the community could answer this, because I don't have answers at my fingertips. What are people doing for books not available on Vital Source or another vendor openly? And there are a lot of publishers to this point that have not opened up access for people digitally. So I'm just curious what others are doing. Thanks, Rebecca. Thanks, Bonnie. I don't know if people are following chat, but Rebecca from Poly said they are scanning and sending. Bonnie Gallagher, we're working from Analytics Report on most frequently used reserve books to see if we can find those first. That's a good process. Carrie, we are willing to scan and send if we get requests as well. And Cabal from University of Albany is scanning and making available the electronic reserve. So thank you, everybody, for those responses. If there's others, I'd appreciate it.
Cable,
sorry. You laugh at me. You laugh at me. Hey, how many times people say Shannon's a girl? I never laugh at people when they say that.
This is Lauren again from Potsdam. Can I ask our libraries, I don't know if I want to really say it out loud, but are you kind of just ignoring copyright, just scanning a chapter here or there? Are you, yeah, what's that? Copyright. Okay, never mind.
Does anybody want to respond to that? Because I think that's a good question. And maybe you can unmute.
Yeah. Okay. So I
Mark, don't. Only if you turn off the recording.
So I don't.
It is shut off.
Yeah. I mean.
Go ahead, Cable.
we've sort of been taking an expansive approach to fair use, and Kyle Courtney has a great blog post right now on what COVID-19 and a pandemic can do to sort of expand our use of fair use. So we're being pretty liberal with that. I think that we've scanned maybe like 10 to 12 chapters for one instructor out of a single textbook this week so far. And others are, you know, just bits and pieces here and there, but that's how we've been handling it.
Can I just ask, when you're doing that and you're talking to faculty, are you making them aware that this is extraordinary and this is not a usual kind of situation? Because my concern is faculty kind of think that is the right anyway. So I just want to make sure we're being, you know, we're clear that, you know, because of the current situation, we are taking an expanded view.
That's exactly what we're doing. Yeah.
Miriam put a good link in there from a blog post from Kyle Courtney.
We have other questions or topics we want to talk about?
Well, you know, one thing, it's probably not on everybody's mind at this time, or maybe it is, I shouldn't make that assumption, is that at the end of the month, the open access policies are due, and many people have passed their open access policies. I know Maureen has been working on standing up the SUNY Open Access Repository. If Maureen's on the call, I think I saw her. Do you want to maybe just give an update on Open Repository?
Sure. So I've been working with Wendy Ackerman and a small group of representatives from various campuses. We've created guidelines for content. And we're also developing some metadata standards and some other standards related to things like naming conventions for campuses and the structure, recommended structure for the subcommunities and collections. Attmire is the vendor. They are standing up a test environment. It was scheduled to be delivered on Monday, 2 days ago. They contacted me to say that they're running a little bit behind. The next steps after we receive that environment will be to populate it with some test data. I've selected some collections from our current DSpace environment that we can use to load in to begin, developing the overall look and feel. The new environment, first of all, I just want to be clear, it's not a replacement of our current DSpace environment. We'll still maintain that and keep that. The current DSpace environment has a broad range of collections from campuses, yearbooks, student newspapers, faculty minutes, as well as some creative content, related to thesis and dissertations and some faculty publications. But the new environment, we do really want to focus on creative and scholarly work that is open access. So that will be the main distinction between the two repositories. The second, the new repository we're calling SOAR, S-O-A-R, the SUNY Open Access Repository. It's based on DSpace as well, but it's a different platform. It's a totally separate platform. And we at the system level have more administrative access to things like updating metadata schemas for different types of collections. So if you have a thesis and dissertation collection, you could have metadata that's different from another collection that might be articles or preprints or whatever. As I said, we were supposed to have received this test environment this week. And since we haven't gotten it yet, of course, we haven't been able to actually get our hands on it yet. But there will be updates as we progress on this. Anything else, Mark, you want me to mention on that front?
Mark had to step away, so he's not going to respond.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or issues we want to discuss?
Shannon, I came in late. This is Carrie. I know that there's been the survey about which libraries are still open and which have been closed. Do you know when that was last updated by any chance?
Yes, we updated it yesterday, but Jennifer and I have been working on taking all of the data points and putting them into a Google spreadsheet that we will update very frequently because not many people, 25 campuses have responded to the survey, but lots of people are posting to listservs that they're closed. So we're trying to aggregate all of these disparate points of data. And I think we should be able to have that out, midday today, sometime later this afternoon thinking it's midday already. We should be able to have it out sometime today with up-to-date information, and then we will update it even further by going to the library websites, hoping that, if people are closed, that they would at least put it on their website so that we have pretty accurate up-to-date information about who's closed or who has restricted access but is open, those types of things.
Okay. I'm just curious. I'm trying to make a good case here. So, thank you.
for those trying to make a good case, again, the live guide that's out there from SLC includes national benchmarking data, the ALA statement, things of that nature. So we're trying to make that close to a one-stop shop, with the exception of these things that I'm linking up to Basecamp right now. So between the live guide and Basecamp, you'll have a really good view of what other SUNY libraries are doing.
We appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, so Rebecca asked, are we shutting down resource sharing universally? We're discussing that right now, but we've been monitoring across the board in the system, and right now we're at about a dozen libraries who are actively still lending inside of SUNY, and we think that that actually is legitimately a lower number, that just of those dozen, some of them haven't shut down completely. So we will, by the end of the day, have a decision whether we're going to shut down completely intra-SUNY resource sharing. But I think we're headed towards that direction. We just want to get a little bit more information on that. But, yeah. You know, especially with the larger libraries, the majority are closing and not doing resource sharing, that it seems like that's where we're headed, but we want to do a quick dive into it before we and make sure that we have people on board with it.
And then for transparency's sake, you should know that some of these decisions, pretty much anything that's affecting everybody, is running through the SLC board. So they're actually actively voting on whether or not to do that right now. And it looks like it's going to go that way.
Hey, it's Mark. Sorry, I had to step away for a second. Jennifer, what's the board voting on?
Shutting down Alma borrowing within the
system. Oh, got it.
And because it's down to just 25% are still listed as active, and we suspect a fair number of those are not actually active.
Yep. And as Tim is saying, we'll handle that config work as well, so that you know, you don't, that's one less thing to worry about. So you know, we'll also walk through how to turn off different options in Primo, which is also your link resolver, just to make things less confusing. And I think too, if you want a decent workflow for having people put in requests for scanning, Tim's doing a webinar on, for those of you who use Iliad as well, for document delivery type requesting. So, yeah. So, Jennifer from Potsdam was saying, you know, thanks for doing the config work. And I, you know, just wanted to say that we are relaxing our, you know, stance on not doing the work for campuses or, you know, the in-depth assistance. Even if you don't have an extended support agreement, you can reach out to us, and within reason, we'll help you out. Please don't use this as a chance to get us to do data cleanup for you or anything that's not pressing. We will draw the line, but we're helping a lot of people out in different ways. So don't hesitate if you're struggling with something. You know, we'll help you as much as we possibly can. And we'll talk a little bit about this at the Science Direct presentation, but we're planning on wrapping around some services with changing those holdings in the near future too, which will be, I think, required when that new agreement comes into effect. Because we know that e-resources is an area that can take some time to do complex changes. Jill, I don't, we can go over that. let's see, is Michelle on?
Repeat the question, Shannon.
Yeah, so Jill, Jill was asking, were we going to discuss how to add a chat box to Primo today? No, we're going to do that tomorrow. There's a webinar on just kind of things to do related to major changes in services, or perhaps being more in the online, promoting more online things like a SpringShare chat box in Primo. And Michelle said she was going to handle it tomorrow. Or Tim is speaking on behalf of Michelle that she's going to demo that tomorrow.
And I would just like to say that because of the amount of time we have, I was not going to go deep into a demo, and everybody's slightly different depending on your chat, but I was going to highlight the FAQs we have about it, and there was a discussion in Basecamp recently about it. So Jill, I can send you that content ahead of time if that would be helpful.
Any other questions or comments? Anything from you, Mark or Carrie? Others?
Carrie, I'm good.
This is Mark. I'm good as well. I just want to say thanks to everybody for making time again. I know this is a stressful situation, and I want to make sure that we keep our channels of communication open with each other. And if any of us can be of any support to you during this time, just feel free to reach out. A number of you have taken us up on that, but. We want to help you through this process as best as we can. So thank you for attending today.
All right, I'll stop the recording and I'll post
now it's
this.
A good time to save the chat. Little ellipsis button for people who want the links.
Oh yeah, well I'll also post them too. I'll post the chat in addition to the recording. However, feel free
Thanks,
to.
Shannon.